This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. We're going to talk some politics today on our Street Knowledge podcast. And we have done this in the past. We're going to do more of it. This isn't a big election year in Virginia. Federal election year. Midterms, of course, nationwide. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives are up, including all 11 in Virginia. And then, of course, Virginia's also got a Senate election. Senator Tim Kaine up for re-election, his first re-election campaign. He won that seat back in 2012. So a lot to keep up with. And, you know, we're based in the western part of Virginia. We keep up closely with the 6th District, which is the district our Augusta Free Press is literally based in. But we're also just a couple of miles away from the border of the 5th District. So we also keep up with that 5th District seat. And so today we're going to focus on the 6th District race because it's as interesting as it's been in a long time. It's been a while, and it's really going to still not be that interesting in one sense. But the incumbent Congressman Bob Goodlatte, Republican, who was first elected to that seat in 1992, is not running for re-election for the first time in 26 years. And so what that means is an open seat. Now, it's an open seat in a district that is drawn to be very Republican. In fact, both the 6th and the 5th, the districts that we are based in and cover and that kind of thing, are pretty Republican-drawn districts. That said, Tom Perriello in 2008 did win one term representing the 5th district in an upset victory in that race, the year of the Barack Obama wave, even though, you know, when you looked at the numbers, actually, Perriello outperformed Obama in the 5th district. But that said, and then he lost in 2010, the Tea Party year. So the one term for Perriello, who then ran last year, in fact, ran for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination in Virginia, lost to Ralph Northam. Northam eventually wins the governor's race, is now governor. Western Virginia politics do have some impact from time to time. And this 6th district race now, so I mentioned it's interesting because Bob Goodlatte's stepping down. It's a very Republican district. Just to give you a sense of the numbers, I looked at the last three elections, and I couldn't even go further, a little further back. The last three elections, 2016, 2014, 2012. Now, the 2014 was a bit of an anomaly. There was not a Democratic candidate in 2014 against Goodlatte. There were two third-party candidates. That year, Goodlatte won 74.5% of the vote to win re-election. The 2 years, most recent cycles, where he faced a Democratic opponent, 2016, 66% of the vote, 2012, 65% of the vote. And in fact, I went back, really dating back to his first election. He's been over 60% dating back to that 1992 election. The closest, most recent race was in 2008. Sam Rasul, who's now a member of the House of Delegates from Roanoke area, Rasul got 37% of the vote. So Goodlatte was in the lower 63% range. But it's a very Republican district. Now that said, there are, you know, when you're breaking down politics, really anywhere. But you know, I'm looking through the lens of Virginia. What you look for in a district to figure out how Republican it may be or how Democratic it may be, largely in Virginia, especially our part of Virginia, you're looking at counties versus cities and the makeup of, because, you know, and again, this kind of plays out to a great degree across the country, but cities do tend to be a little more Democratic. And counties, suburbs, and then the rural areas of counties tend to be more Republican. So you look at the 6th district. Now, there are cities in the 6th district. Lynchburg's in the 6th, bigger city. Airport, colleges. Roanoke is in the 6th, airport and colleges. There are some smaller cities. In Harrisonburg, JMU is the big college there. Also EMU. Airport not too far down the road. Stanton, Waynesboro, right here in my backyard. Stanton has a college, Waynesboro does not. And as a result, Waynesboro not having a college, it does lean more, actually does lean Republican slightly. But still, compared to the surrounding area, it's more Democratic. Lexington, down the road from us, is with two colleges, VMI and Washington Lee, tends to lean Democratic. But then there's lots and lots, because this district goes up to Shenandoah County and down to the Roanoke area. It juts across the Blue Ridge Mountains to get, you know, that Lynchburg, and comes back then down to Roanoke. there's a lot of county. There's a lot of rural areas. There really aren't a lot of suburbs, which is interesting. You know, in Northern Virginia, for example, you've got the the suburbs, exurbs of D.C., and the further out from D.C. you go, the more Republican you see things getting. It still leans Democratic in the exurbs, but it does get more competitive the further away you get from D.C. Well, here we are in the 6th District. You've pretty much got your cities, and then you've got counties, and the counties really, again, there's not a lot in between. I know the development of Stanton-Waynesboro area very well, for example. Yeah, there's some the Augusta County, which surrounds those two cities, which are just a few miles apart in the middle. There's development in between. There's development around the cities, but not a lot. It's not like there's the flight from the city to the suburbs like you see in places like Richmond and Virginia Beach, and again up in Northern Virginia. So you can literally be in the middle of a city in this district, and then a few miles later you're in cow country, and that's life in Western Virginia, life in the 6th District. So I've laid down the groundwork for you there to explain this race, and there are a lot of candidates. There's 8 candidates running for the Republican nomination. There's 4 on the Democratic side, and it's a Republican district. It's really hard. This is going to be an interesting year nationally, certainly. I mean, odds are that Democrats don't just win the House back, but they win it, in stunning fashion at the national level. Just like we saw in Virginia this past year, the 2017 House of Delegates elections, Democrats had, I think it was 33 seats in the House of Delegates out of the 100, now 49. Could have had 50 if literally a draw in one race that was a tie. There was a drawing. It could have been a 50-50 split. There still could be a 50-50 split, actually, too. The mayor of Virginia Beach resigning this week. Republican mayor of Virginia Beach, a Republican delegate, is planning to run for that seat, assuming he wins. There could be an open seat there that Democrats would definitely press for to make a 50-50 split there in that House again. So, at the national level, federal level, it's going to be a wave election, just like that 2010 election was a wave in response to Barack Obama's election, a wave that went Republican. This time in 2018, it's going to be a wave that's going to go Democratic. And so, again, the question isn't, do Democrats win the House? It's how much do they win the House? And then I think another fair question is, what happens to Republicans then? I mean, Republican caucus, what is its makeup? This is why you see guys like Bob Goodlatte, Paul Ryan, and numerous others who are, Republican stalwarts in Congress deciding, hey, 2018 has been good. We're moving on. Because, if you're Bob Goodlatte, who's been a member of the leadership for the past dozen or so years, Paul Ryan, this House Speaker, of the last few years, you've worked to get, majority and to have a legislative agenda that, at the last few years of the Barack Obama presidency were marked by the fighting between Democrats and Republicans because Republicans were so successful, so unified in the House at backing their agenda. Then you switch and you realize we're on the back bench now. If you're a leader in your party and you've been a leader of the majority for a long time, it can be difficult then to go back to the minority, to the backbench. So that's why the seat's open, honestly. That's why Bob Goodlatte's stepping aside. So then you look at the candidates on the GOP side. When I ask the question, what is the makeup of that Republican caucus? Because, already by self-selection, there are a number of Republicans, the old guard, are taking themselves out of the mix. I don't think anybody would call Bob Goodlatte a Tea Party guy. He certainly has benefited from the votes of Tea Party supporters. But he faced at least one challenge. I think it was 2012. Karen Kwiatkowski ran at Goodlatte from the right in a Republican primary and got a third of the vote. She got 33% of the vote in Republican primary from the right. But that said, you got Goodlatte gone. You got a lot of other moderate leaders, more moderate leaders, relatively speaking, in the Republican Party leaving. Some who may be jettisoned by the voters. So what is the Republican, what is that caucus going to look like when you get elected? I know voters don't think this way. You just vote for the person you want to vote for. But if you were being strategic in the 6th District, if you were a 6th District Republican voter, it might help you to think, all right, We've got these eight candidates who might be best suited to represent our interest in Washington in a Democratic and majority Congress. That's a fair question, I think. So I raise it that way. I think it's a fair question. Maybe not. I think it's a fair question. You raise it that way. Among the eight candidates, and I'm not going to name them all, but I think that it comes down to me to two. And maybe I'm misreading this. And it's interesting. There's not a primary. This is a on the Republican side, at least. It's a convention, May 19th at James Madison University in Harrisonburg. It comes down to the eight candidates in a nominating convention. Then you're not going out and appealing to the general voters. I'm getting press releases here at AFP all the time from the candidates, touting whatever they can tout policy wise. Ben Klein, the member of the Virginia House delegates from this, one of the members of the Virginia House delegates from this district, specifically the Rockbridge area over to Amherst, a little bit of Augusta County, touting how much money he's raised. That's one reason to say vote for me if you're a delegate if you're a delegate to this convention, because hey, look at me, I've got a war chest. You're not going for the general votes, you're going for the votes of the people who were there at the convention. So it's a different game, it's a different ballgame. There's not going to be crossover Democrats, probably not even a lot of moderates. You have to think, the people who vote in party conventions tend to be the more ideological on either side, Democrat or Republican. So that's why, I had a conversation this week, which is what prompted me to think of doing this podcast, and we should do more of these, and we will do more of these as the next few weeks roll on to May and then into June when the Democrats have a primary. That Cynthia Dunbar, who, doesn't have an electoral history, but she's certainly seems to be building up name recognition among Republicans. The thinking is that she's the favorite just because of now, again, breaking down how things work out in a nominating convention, maybe versus even a primary. Primaries still tend to be more ideological voters, but you do have that chance of moderate and even some crossover voters. That Dunbar, who is the darling of the far right, somewhat darling, of these candidates anyway, would have to be considered the front runner. And I'll step back for a second to say, when Goodlatte announced, I think it was back in January, that he was stepping down and would not run for re-election, he's still going to finish out his term. He'll serve until January of 2019. Ben Klein was so quick to immediately announce his candidacy that it seemed to me that day, at least, that that things had been sort of preordained. That Goodlatte had made this clear, and then, because Ben Klein actually worked on the staff of Goodlatte early in his political career before he ran for elected office himself. And so it seemed like, hey, yeah, I'm stepping down. I'm tapping on the shoulder of this guy that used to work for me and who's a good delegate, and I'm going to make sure that he gets the nomination. And then everybody else throws their hat in the ring. Chaz Evans Haywood, someone I know well, too, clerk of circuit court, I believe he is, up in Rockingham County, Harrisburg, Rockingham County. Known Chaz for a long time. And there's other candidates here again as well, but yeah, it seemed like it was something that was going to be set in stone. That this was Ben Klein's to kind of work with, and the fact that Dunbar, who is interesting, I'll say it that way, had a press conference in Augusta County earlier this week, claiming that that opponents of hers in the Republican primary field were besmirching her reputation, whisper smear campaigns, something about her having an administrative suspension of her law license that had been misrepresented. But again, quietly, it's not something that at least is getting out in the public domain, but claiming out, allegations of phone calls being made to convention delegates and that kind of thing. Of course, the response from her opponents' campaigns was universal. I'm paraphrasing here. She's crazy that they suggested that this is going on in our names. But I can kind of go back to my own experience. I ran for city council in Waynesboro a decade ago, 2008. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that doesn't make it in the public domain. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And it happened in my campaign against me. Lots of things were said about me that weren't true. So yeah, I can sympathize with her on that. That said, it is the only odd part to me is going public with that. But, you know, you roll the dice, you make a choice. She seems, though, to be at least you know, the people I talk with who are following these races closely, the Republican and Democratic races closely, seems like she's the favorite. What I brought up about how does that serve the 6th district if you have a person who's probably even to the right of the Tea Party representing your district in Congress in a Democratic environment? We've got to look ahead at 2019. Democrats are going to have a majority, maybe a good majority in the House. They're going to have a majority in the Senate. You're still going to have at least, what are we, April now? I'm thinking January of next year, President Trump will still be President Trump. He won't be former President Trump. So, but, you know, assuming he is President Trump, you can guarantee that as soon as whoever the Speaker of the House is bangs that gavel to start the first session of Congress starting in 2019, January of 2019, that there's going to be committees formed that are going to investigate President Trump much more thoroughly, which is to say at all, compared to how Republican committees have been treating it. You think back to the Clinton scandals of the 1990s, which were about a land deal that may or may not have ended up being something that led to the Monica Lewinsky and the Paula Jones and then the impeachment vote. I mean, you're talking about some really light stuff compared to what Trump is alleged to be involved with. And I'm not even just talking about the possible collusion with Russian hackers and maybe even all the way up to Vladimir Putin to throw the election. There's stuff in Trump's background that dates back to his, you know, 1980s, 1990s as a struggling businessman in New Jersey that tie him to the mob, that tie him to oligarchs in Russia, that tie him to some shady characters in Kazakhstan. You know, it's going to be there's so much there. It's going to be hard to unravel it all. There's so much there, and that's going to be the tone of from January 2019 into the presidential election season of 2020. So you got Cynthia Dunbar. If she's the favorite, we'll go over the Democratic side in a second, but you know, it's a Republican district. So whoever wins this nomination, you got to think, is going to win. Even if it's a far, far right person like a Cynthia Dunbar, maybe that makes the race closer on election day. But you know, it's still hard to imagine. It would be a tremendous. It would have to be a tsunami wave type wave for a Democrat to win in the 6th district in 2018. 6th district in any, until it's redrawn to include maybe Charlottesville. I mean, it's just hard to ever imagine a Democrat winning here in this district anytime soon. So you got Dunbar. You got, you know, someone who's a far right person who's basically going to sit on a committee. You know, what's the leadership of the Republican caucus like? Is it a lot of fellow travelers who are also themselves Freedom Caucus Tea Party types? Maybe in that environment she gets some decent committee assignments from whoever the Republican minority leader is. But if it's a more moderate group that's in the leadership of the Republican caucus in the House, she sits on the back bench on some nameless, faceless committees. You know, that's the way that's going to work. I throw that out because let's go with a more establishment type candidate. And I think this race probably comes down to Cynthia Dunbar and Ben Klein, even though there's 8 candidates in the race. And I'm not trying to sully the reputations of the others to say I'm not going to talk much about them, but I think it is a 2-candidate race, even though there are 8 people in it. Ben Klein would be the other direction that things could go in that 6th district Republican race. If Klein gets the nomination, I think he probably wins the seat in November without really a lot of challenge. I mean, I think Dunbar makes it closer. I don't know what that means. I don't know the Democrats even cracked 40% in the district, but if they do, it's because Dunbar runs and you know, continues to have wild press conferences like she did earlier this week in Augusta County, you know, raising conspiracy theories about some things behind the scenes. But I don't know that Klein I don't know that Klein gets the nomination, and in the race is even something that anybody really puts any money into from the Democratic side. And then if he's seated in January of 2019, I think he's the kind of guy. He's got a legislative background. I make no bones about how I'm a liberal Democrat, progressive Democrat. Ben Klein's done a good job in Richmond. There are certainly things from a policy standpoint, the positions he takes on a lot of things I disagree with, but he's worked for the district that he represents, and so it's hard to imagine that reputation wouldn't then get up, you know, to the folks making committee assignments among the Republican minority caucus in the House next year, and that wouldn't be something that, you know, Ben Klein could maybe, you know, wrangle at least something that could be beneficial to the 6th District. For example, you know, I've been critical of Bob Goodlatte for a long time. Among the things, though, he was the chair of the House Agriculture Committee back in the 2000s decade, the alts decade, I guess we can call it. But then had the opportunity to take over the House Judiciary Committee, did so. That's a plum assignment for the individual, no question. For Bob Goodlatte individually, personally, great assignment. That's a very high-profile assignment. But for the 6th District, it doesn't do anything. The House Agriculture Committee position was much more helpful to the 6th District, a very rural district. So, you know, I would hope that, you know, that whoever between Dunbar and Klein, that they could maybe seek an opportunity to serve on that type of committee to actually have impact on the district here. That'd be kind of nice. But that's kind of the way I see that race going. I mean, I see it, you know, Dunbar, Klein, and that's your choice. Do you want that more establishment type candidate who can actually maybe bring home some bacon, so to speak, and can actually, you know, do some things for your district? Or do you want the fire breather who probably gets stuck on the back bench and really, you know, aside from issuing some fiery press releases, doesn't do much for anybody in the 6th District? I look over the Democratic side threw out there again for those who, you know, breaking news, those who weren't aware. Yeah, this is, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive, I'm a Democrat. That's fine. That's what I am. That's how I see the world. Universal health care, LGBTQ rights, education is an important cornerstone of our policy, social safety net. You know, these are all things that are very important to me, and I'd love to see both Congress, Senate, President, administration enacted, and Supreme Court seated that can get our country moving in the right direction. On all those and more, I'm disappointed on it, at not at the candidates themselves. Sergio Coppola, Jennifer Lewis, someone that I know from the Waynesboro area here, Peter Velosin, and Charlotte Moore. Those individuals, anybody who runs for office, and even and the Republican side as well, as someone who has run for office in the past and has actually then, you know, a couple different times worked as a campaign consultant to candidates running for office. Anybody who sticks their name out there, sticks their head out there, sticks their neck out there on the line to run for office, local level, congressional level, whatever level you want to run for, I admire, because it's not easy. You give up a lot of your time. I mean, you know, we all have bills still to pay. We all have families. We all have lives to live. But when you run for office, that becomes the thing you wake up and go to sleep thinking about. It's tough. It's hard. You got to raise money. You got to, you know, shake hands. You got to go out and knock on doors. You got to coordinate people that can help you do all those things. It's a 24/7 job, and then on top of all your other 24/7 responsibilities. So when I say I'm disappointed in the Democratic field, it's not in any of those individuals. Congratulations to those folks for running. It's that there's not a name in there, and you know, that there's not a fifth name in there that says to me, legislative experience, name recognition, proven ability to raise money, energize people. You've got good people there. They're all good people, but there's not, you know, if a Cree Deeds, for example, had been cajoled into, you know, former, he's a state senator still from the district, ran for governor in 2009, lost in that year. That was a post-Obama wave that preceded the 2010 Tea Party wave. But if a Cree Deeds could have gotten in this race, I'm still not sure Cree Deeds could have won this race, even against a Cynthia Dunbar. I think it would be very close. I think it could be a very competitive election if someone with his stature could have gotten in a race. Maybe even Rasul again. Perhaps Rasul, as you know, now that he's several terms as a member of the House of Delegates, maybe that name recognition could you know play out across the district. But you know, it would take someone like that, in my opinion, on the Democratic side to make this race competitive. It would take someone with a track record, with some name recognition, a brand name, and an ability to pull together what you need to pull together to run a congressional race. It's not you start thinking about what it takes to run a congressional race anywhere, but especially in Western Virginia. Now, there are some urban districts. Heck, there are some urban districts in New York that are pretty much a few blocks of New York. There's so many people concentrated. Roughly, 600,000 people, 700,000 people or so live in a congressional district. So, you know, you can have some, you know, in urban areas, you can have just a few miles really to cover. And that's what you cover from your congressional district standpoint. Here, we're talking about, again, Shenandoah County, pretty much, I think even Frederick County, the district lines up there close to the Winchester area. So think of 81 if you're looking at it. If you think of a map or look at a map at some point while you're listening to this podcast. So 81 up near Winchester, all the way down to Roanoke, and then over to Lynchburg as it jumps over the mountains there for a little while. I mean, you're talking about, roughly exit 300 or so on Interstate 81 all the way down to exit 140-ish down in Roanoke, 160 miles of just on a straight shot, and then again lurching over into Lynchburg and back. That's a lot of territory. That covers TV markets that include, when you're up there in the northern part, you Harrisonburg market, also, though, the D.C. market. Then, there's a Charlottesville TV market here where we are in Waynesboro-Stanton. Lexington starts the Roanoke market. Then there's a Lynchburg TV market that's separate. I mean, that's just from a media buy standpoint. That's a lot of places you got to buy ads if you're going to run a campaign that's going to get your name out there, right? So that's a lot of money for TV ads. the number of cities, the number of counties, because they're all smaller. I mean, there's not a city in this district. Maybe Roanoke's around 100,000, but, Harrisburg's around 50. Lynchburg is, I have to look this up, and I'm sure I'll get this wrong, but 50 to 70. You know, there's a lot of pockets, and you've got it. So, whereas in a more urban district, you can make a few contacts, here in a rural district, you kind of know people up and down a long corridor who don't know each other. I mean, people in Shenandoah County and Frederick County don't deal with people in Roanoke very often. The Democrats there, and they have such different issues. I mean, if you're in an urban area, you can at least think for the most part, in a compact district, compact geographical district, there's a lot of similarities and issues. But the issues that people up in the northern part of this district deal with, a lot of the folks who work, who live there work, a lot more folks now than certainly 10 and 20 years ago, work in D.C. or the D.C. surrounding area and commute back and forth. And that's a long commute, an hour and a half commute each day back and forth to work. Their issues are transportation related. They're bedroom community related. So, folks who live in the middle here, Waynesboro and Stanton are considered rural areas, but they're not. I live in a city of 23,000 people. 5 miles away from me is another city of 25,000 people. We have unique small town urban issues. Then you go down, out in the counties. I'm a native of the western part of Augusta County. You get past Stanton going towards West Virginia, and there are more cows and trees than there are people. Lots more cows and lots more trees than there are people. Different issues there. And then you go south, the Lynchburg and Roanoke areas actually do have some urban issues. I mean, some serious urban issues to deal with, transportation related, business development related. So it's hard. It's tough. And so to build a campaign as a newcomer is hard. The Republican infrastructure in place. Okay, so if Ben Klein wins the nomination, he's got his own campaign structure. He's been in the House of Delegates, I think, early 2000. I think it was 2001 or 2002. He won a special election when Vance Wilkins, the former House Speaker, stepped down. But he's been in the House of Delegates for a long time. He's got his own, he has a process. He has campaign folks he's worked with for a long time. young guy. He's my age, but you know, he's got that long track record. You know, to ramp up from that, it's kind of like when you think of it in a business term. All right, so he's, you know, he's got a company with, you know, he's got a medium sized company. All he's got to do is make it bigger. But if you're Cynthia Dunbar, who doesn't have that kind of infrastructure in place, this is her first campaign for a seat of this nature. You know, okay, so she doesn't have that experience, but you know, Republicans do have, whoever gets the nomination, it's hard to imagine that, and it's going to be acrimonious because eight competitors for the nomination. It's going to be a little bitter at, you know, for the first week or two or few after the nomination settled, but the infrastructure is going to be in place because Republicans are going to, at least the people who need to run campaign type people, they're going to coalesce around the winning candidate, and they're going to make sure that everything's in place for success in November. So on that side, it's you know, I don't think it really matters who gets the nomination from that sense. From an organizational standpoint, GOP will be fine. On the Democratic side, though, because you don't have someone like a Sam Rasul or a Creed Eads who has a campaign organization that they've worked with to get elected at either the House level, House of Delegates level, State Senate level, any of these candidates, Sergio Coppola, Jennifer Lewis, Peter Velosin, Charlotte Moore, they're going to have to quickly get together a campaign. Now, they're already campaigning now, I know, for a nomination. But it's one thing to, you know, be competing for a Democratic nomination, you know, with a very small base of voters in a primary situation, and then have to ramp that up to appeal to more general election voters. Even, you know, a Democratic primary in a very Republican, very, very Republican area it'll feel like a convention in one sense. You know, you're not going to do a lot of mass media advertising. You're not going to go out there for the general voter. You're still going to talk. The core of your campaign between now and June is going out and speaking to Democratic committees where there may be five people at a meeting on a Tuesday night, or 10 or 15, or maybe, you know, you might get lucky and get a few more. But you know, it's going to be that kind of campaigning even in a primary. But whoever gets a nomination in June then has to ramp up really quickly to be able to have a campaign that has viability from Roanoke to Lynchburg through Harrisonburg up to Northern Virginia, basically up to the outskirts of Northern Virginia. And Democrats in the 6th District do not have the same infrastructure at the district party level as the GOP does. Democrats haven't won this seat since 1990. Actually, Bob Goodlatte in 1992, he won after the retirement of Jim Olin, who had been the congressman for 10 years. Jim Olin was a Democrat. Now he's a Southern Democrat and, you know, very conservative Democrat, but he's a Democrat. So, but it's we're more than a quarter century past the last time a Democrat was competitive in this district from a district perspective. So there aren't campaign managers just sitting around waiting to jump in and, you know, tell you who to talk to in Rockingham County when you need something for an event in August, or Rockbridge County, or Buchanan County. Even know how to pronounce some of these names. Stanton is not Staunton. Buchanan is not Buchanan, it's Buchanan. You know, the things like that. Little things that are big things in a district that is as far flung as the 6th District is. There just aren't those people sitting around. So, you know, you're going to get some people sent in, theoretically, by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. You're probably not going to get the best resumes sitting on the desk there. And no offense to the kids who end up being sent here. You know, the best resources, the most resources are going to go to those seats where, you know, Democrats can steal some seats away from Republicans, and that's not going to be the case here. So it's going to be an uphill battle at best for whoever gets that Democratic nomination, even if it's a far-right candidate who could theoretically open the door just a small bit to Democrats in the 6th. It's just not going to happen. You know, this district, again, is drawn. It's, you know, the 5th and 6th are drawn. Hell, the whole state map has been drawn. This is a state that has now, for the last two statewide election cycles, elected Democrats at the governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general level sweeps. You just saw the House of Delegates went from 33 to 49 and had far majority. It was only 54% of the vote statewide at the House delegates level, but still only got 49 seats because of the gerrymandering. You've had, what, the last, let's see, the last three Senate elections, 2008, 2012, 2014, have gone Democratic. Now, 2014 was close, closer than expected, but you know, still gone Democratic. The last two the last three presidential elections have gone Democratic. And that said, eight members of the Virginia congressional delegation are Republican, three are Democratic. The districts are drawn to, you know, really compress the Democratic vote in the Northern Virginia, Richmond, and I guess Virginia Beach areas, and not even so much there because I think the delegate down, or the congressman down that way is Republican, you know, more competitive seat in recent years. But so these districts are drawn to be Republican, and they're going to play that way. At least, you know, until the 2020 redistricting, and we'll see how that plays out for Democrats and Republicans statewide. But it's a tough race for Democrats, and hard to imagine again, unless it's just such a tidal tsunami type wave nationally that somehow Democrats can raise their own boats here to win in the sixth. If that's the case, I mean, you're talking about. I don't even know. I can't even imagine what that would have to mean nationally. If Democrats were competitive here, what that would mean, what was happening nationally. And you know, as much as I'm foreseeing, and I'm not the only one, and I'm not a genius saying this, I'm foreseeing solid Democratic wins at the House and Senate levels in November. I'm not seeing it to that level where it's such a thing that even very red districts that are 60% plus districts for Republicans go for a Democratic candidate. So that's where we stand here in mid-April as we look out to the race in the 6th district, and we'll have more on this, and we'll get more into the Senate race and the 5th district race over the hill from us, Central Virginia, on podcasts, and we'll do some columns and analysis and that kind of thing as well. And it's a good time. Virginia politics, very busy politics, and it's a very busy politics season here on AFP. So I want to thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, comments, contact information on our website, very readily available, augustafreepress2@gmail.com. You can tweet me at augfreepress. We have a Facebook page with 100,000-plus followers. You can message us there, jump into a conversation there if you'd like. But love to hear from you and your thoughts on Virginia politics, Virginia sports, whatever else you can get into. I want to thank you for listening again. Have a great day.